If you ever wanted to read a phone book, this is going to be a great sermon for you. We have arrived at the Hebrew phone book, beginning in Genesis 5:1. This is the book of the generations of Adam. Genesis 5:3. When Adam had lived 130 years, he fathered a son in his own likeness, after his own image, and named him Seth. Although Jim and I aren't 130, we are raising a child in our senior years. It's really great. It is. It's a blessing that cannot be described in words. However, I can't imagine being 130 and doing it. What Genesis 5 tells us is every human being is a descendant of Adam and Eve. We inherited our human nature from them, and sadly, we inherited our sin nature through them. There is no morally good person or generation. We are all affected and infected by human sin. Originally, Adam and Eve had two kids, Cain and Abel. But Cain killed Abel, so there was only one genetic line, and unfortunately, it was ungodly. So God gave Adam and Eve another child to replace Abel, and it was Seth. Now, there were two genetic lines. One was godly, and one was ungodly. Genesis 5, 4 and 5. The days of Adam after he fathered Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. According to antediluvian history, and what is antediluvian? It's before the flood. So there's history before the flood. And this history tells us that Adam had a total of 36 sons and 23 daughters. Early human beings had huge families. Now imagine for a minute with me being an ancient woman and you're living to be 800, 900 years old. You could potentially have kids for hundreds of years. Oh, nobody else is smiling. Okay, moving along. Genesis 5, verses 6 through 8. When Seth had lived 105 years, he fathered Enosh. Seth lived after he fathered Enosh 807 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. Personally, I'm glad I'm not going to live 900 years. I'm already tired. Genesis 5, 9 through 11. When Enosh had lived 90 years, he fathered Kenan. Enosh lived after he fathered Kenan 815 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enosh were 905 years and he died. Genesis 5, 12 through 14. When Kenan had lived 70 years, he fathered Melehel. Kenan lived after he fathered Melehel 840 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Kenan were 910 years and he died. If you notice, the further away we get from Adam, the less details there are about these guys. We don't know if they were right-handed or left-handed. We don't know if they had a peanut allergy. We don't know how tall they were. All we know now is they died. The text says over and over in this chapter, and he died, and he died. We get it. People die. Guess what? In less than 100 years, people aren't going to know that much about us either. The point is that much of human life is typical and common. People live, they have kids, they eat a lot of snacks, and then they die. It's sad and maybe a little boring, but it is life. I could keep going down Adam's genetic line, but we don't have 2 years, so I'm going to get to the point. The whole point of this passage is to get us from Adam to Noah. There were 1,656 years of genealogy from Adam to Noah. Genesis 5:32. After Noah was 500 years old, Noah fathered Shem, Ham, and Japheth. There is something really important that we get from this long genealogy. God knows all of these guys' names. We can go through our lives and really only a handful of people in this world know our names. Never mind the world, how about in Rockford? The majority of people in Rockford don't even know our names. If you go to the grocery store, how many people do you think know what your name is when you go in there? Probably nobody, unless you go with somebody you know. If you go to a restaurant, hardly anybody knows your name, unless we go to Buena Beef, the waitress knows our name. If somebody does know your name, it's a great feeling, isn't it? It makes you feel kind of important. When somebody calls out your name, it fills you with warmth, unless they use your middle name too. Then you know you're in trouble. But you just can't help but turn your head when someone says your name. You all know my name is spelled funny, right? My mother thought it was cute. Phonetically, it's JC. Did you know I can tell when people say my name whether or not they know how it's spelled? The CK sounding part of JACI is usually said in a softer way, and the CK sounding part of JACKIE is said in a harder way. If we were to do a sermon series on the book of Numbers, and believe me, we're not going to, I am not that crazy, but if we did, we would have to come to the same conclusion. It is evident from Genesis 5 and the entire book of Numbers that God knows people by their names. There's over 8 billion people in this world, and God knows every single one of them by their name. God knows your name. God knows everybody's name. God calls you by name. When God calls you from the grave, he's going to call you by name, just like he did with Lazarus. In a world filled with billions of people, God knows everybody by name. Your name will be forgotten several decades after you die. I don't even remember my great-grandparents' names, but my name will never be forgotten by God, and neither will yours. Names given to children in the Bible are very different than the names we give our children. In our country, we name kids the names that we like. And I have some baby naming advice. If your last name is Board, you probably shouldn't name your kid Bill. Bill Board. If your last name is Pot, you shouldn't name your kid Jack. Jack Pot. If your last name is Turner, you shouldn't name your kid Paige. Paige Turner. If your last name is Bacon, you probably shouldn't name your kid Crispy. Crispy Bacon. Okay, I'm done. As you know, I have an affinity for biblical names, especially if they start with the letter Z. Now, I'll bet that Jim never would have guessed he would marry a woman who would want to name his kids weird names. But I eased him into it slowly, starting off with Zach, right? That's really tame. But then I went wild. It's kind of like boiling a frog. When Jim and I were naming the kids, it wasn't enough that the name was a Bible Z name. The meaning also mattered to me. For instance, we briefly considered naming Zeb Zebulon, but then we found out what it means as mountain. Well, I found that really uninspiring. So we went with Zebediah, which means gift of God. We gave Vivi my very favorite Z name as a middle name. It's Zion, and it means the one God rescued. I think that's perfect. In the Bible, names were not given because the parents liked them. Far from it. Names were given as a description of the kid, what was going on before he was born, or as a wish for what he would become. Isaac, for instance, means laughter. He was given that name because his mother laughed when she was told she would have a baby at the age of 90. In the story about the birth of Esau and Jacob found in Genesis 26, we see the names given to these little babies are names that we would never dream of giving to one of ours. The root of Jacob's name literally means heel and grasping the heel. This means that this kid was going to try to take over somebody's position. Incidentally, my full name is Jacqueline, and it is the French female form of Jacob, so watch out. Jacob's twin brother Esau was a hairy little kid when he was born, so he was literally named Harry, not H-A-R-R-Y like the disowned Prince of England, but H-A-I-R-Y like a hairy ape. The prophet Hosea married a prostitute, and he raised three kids fathered by different men. He named these kids some pretty insulting names. Hey, Hosea, if you're mad, just say so. But a name he gave to one of these kids was Lo Ammi, which means not mine. Imagine poking your head out the door and hollering for not mine to come in for dinner. Even Mary and Joseph didn't name Jesus Jesus because they liked the name. They named him Jesus because it means God will save. To further make the point that God knows people's names, there are numerous instances where God calls them by their names. These moments often signify that something big is about to happen. Moses' encounter with God at the burning bush is one of the most iconic moments in the Old Testament. In Exodus 3:4, God calls out to him, "Moses, Moses." And because he said his name twice, we know that this is an urgent and significant moment in Moses' life. The story of Samuel's calling is an example of God's knowledge of people's names. In 1 Samuel 3:10, God calls young Samuel by name. This is the moment of the beginning of Samuel's prophetic ministry. Samuel's story emphasizes the importance of listening for the voice of God. I believe he knows every single one of our names, and from time to time, if you're very quiet, you will hear him say your name too. In the New Testament, Mary Magdalene's encounter with the risen Jesus is a profound moment. In John 20:16, Jesus calls her name, Mary. This simple yet powerful spoken word transforms her grief into joy as she realizes that her Lord is not dead. He is risen. Mary's experience serves as a testament to the transformative power of being known by God and being called by name. In Bible days, the act of naming people or things was a sign of authority. In the ancient world, when a king conquered another country and he captured subjects, he would give them new names. Daniel, for instance, was given a new name. We read from Daniel 1, 6 through 7. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. There's a bittersweet story about a baby being born to Jacob's second wife, and this is another example of a man using his authority to rename his child. Genesis 35, 18. And as her soul was departing, for she was dying, she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. She calls the baby Benoni, meaning, "You caused me to suffer." Jacob knows that this name is going to be a burden for this kid to carry through life, so he mercifully names him something else, son of the right hand, Benjamin. Benjamin's father had the authority to redefine Benjamin's identity and his future by giving him a new name. God also has the authority to change people's names, and he has done so. When God renamed people, he redefined their identity and changed their destiny. Genesis 32, 22 through 28 describes a strange account of Jacob wrestling with the Lord at the river Jabbok. During the fight, Jacob's hip gets dislocated and God changes his name to Israel. Israel either means the one who struggles with God or God prevails. Up until this moment, Jacob lived up to his name. Jacob lied his way through life to get what he wanted. He struggled and fought as dirty as he could to get his own way. But God brought Jacob to the end of himself. When God literally pins him to the ground and gets him right where he wants him, he changes his name. Jacob's new name reflected a change of heart and a transformation of character. No longer would he be defined by his past or his lousy temperament or his family name. He would now be defined by God's work in his life and the name that God spoke over him, Israel. The life of Jacob is a prophetic picture of what happens when we come to Christ. When we are born again, we are also renamed. Our identity changes. In Christ, we are no longer defined by our past. We are no longer defined by what our families and friends say about us. We aren't even defined by what we say about ourselves. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says we are a new creation. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. This is a new covenant promise, and Isaiah prophesied about it, and it has come true for us. Isaiah 62:2, you shall be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will give. Jesus gives us a promise in Revelation 2:17 that he will give us a new name if we are faithful when he returns. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who conquers, I will give some of the hidden manna, and I will give him a white stone with a new name written on the stone that no one knows except the one who receives it. Revelation 3:12 tells us God will give us a new name, a secret name, which shows that we have an intimate relationship with God. This name might be compared with the pet names couples have for each other. Another idea that can be associated with this new name is the assurance that it gives us of our heavenly destination. Your new name is there waiting for you. Your reservation in heaven is under this name. The ancients believed that the names that they gave insight into a person's identity and were intertwined with a person's destiny. In a negative sense, Jacob lived up to his name. He grasped for Esau's birthright and took his blessing away from him. This is one reason why God renames us. It's his way of changing our destiny and our identity. I can't even begin to guess what my new name will be in heaven, but I doubt it's going to start with a Z. I think our new names will reflect the work that God has done in our lives. I think our names will be things like overcomer, conqueror, faithful, loved, merciful, righteous, Christian. Now, that might be hard to believe for those of us who have subconsciously named ourselves things like unworthy, reject, stupid, failure, unlovable, sinful. Listen to me. None of these are your names. Even before God gives you a new name, these aren't your names. Tuesday morning, Zeb's best friend since junior high school, Cameron, killed himself. We are heartbroken for Cameron and the full life he could have lived. I'm also heartbroken for Zeb, who now has to figure out how to live life without his best friend. I want to tell you a little bit about Cameron this morning, because I'm not sure his family will have a funeral. He has some strange family dynamics. But Cameron was an Army vet. Cameron had tattoos head to foot. As you can see, he had a beard. It looked worse than that the last time I saw him. But he was a good man. He'd gotten a good job. He'd gotten on his feet. Being a vet, as many people know, isn't easy. He had a little PTSD. And Cameron was tough. One day, Cameron and Zeb had gone down to Chicago in the city, and they were a witness to a mugger grabbing some lady's purse. And Cameron looked at Zeb and said, "Come on, Zeb, let's go." So Cameron pulled Zeb with him, and they tackled this guy in the street and took the purse and gave it back to the lady. That was Cameron. And Cameron, Zeb was bullied as a kid. He was redheaded. And by the time he got into junior high, he was head to foot with acne. And the kids were not nice to him at all. And Cameron was Zeb's first friend. He didn't care what Zeb looked like. He thought Zeb was all right. But I guarantee you that Cameron gave himself one of these names: unworthy, reject, stupid, failure. I don't know which one it was. Perhaps it was all of them. What haunts me at night is which one of these names was a devil whispering in Cameron's ear at the end. Names have power. They have power of life and death. Names drive destiny. Don't give yourself a name like that. Don't let somebody you love give themselves a name like that. Don't let the devil give you a name. Make sure the names you give to people add to them and don't take away from them. And let God name you. God will give you a new name. His name will be a symbol of radical change in your life, and it will demonstrate that God has full authority over you. In Christ, God calls us each by a new name, and one day we're going to know it, and we're going to be called by it. Thanks be to God.